Welcome to Weird Games and Weirder People, a podcast about role-playing games and the weird, wonderful people behind them.
Hello, wonderful weirdos, this is Diogo Nogueira, and today's guest is the magnificent Daniel Cell from Melsonia Art Council, author of Troika, of Undercroft Zine, of many wonderful tabletop RPG products. And but before that, I have a few announcements. I will be on Game On Expo on Phoenix, Arizona from March 15th to 17th, and also be on GaryCon on Lake Geneva, Wisconsin from March 23rd to 25th. And I would like to remind you to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, leave us a review, tell people what you think about the show, share with your friends, with your family, with your gaming group, and support the show. Look at the show notes to see how you can support the show. Pay us a coffee at Ko-Fi, buy one of my games. I don't know, do what you can, and I'll do what I can here. And now getting back to Daniel Cell, we talk about many things. We talk about how he always tries to learn new things. Every month he's running a company, he's writing stuff, he's editing. We talk about creative writing, how he tries to work without worrying too much about what people think about his work, how it will be received, and he believes that brings a much more authenticity, and that's what brings the weird to the games and to the books, to be authentic and do what you think, what you like. We talk about Swivers, which is in Kickstarter right now. It's going to be released by Melsonia Art Council, by Luke Gearing and David Hoskins. And we talk about creative rituals. We talk about his love for pens, how he reads a lot of sci-fi and watch a lot of Italian horror movies. We talk about Tecumel, Horn, Dark Sun, Dark Soul. We had a great, great chat, and I hope you enjoy it as much as we did. So let's get weird with Daniel Cell. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to Weird Games and Weirder People. I'm so happy to have you here and, you know, see you in face finally and having this conversation instead of, you know, through Facebook chat or anything. So how have you been, my friend?
Very good. We're very busy. Just coming off of Christmas time. Christmas time is busy for games and whatnot. So, yeah, good.
Yeah, Melsono is always putting something out there, right? And you know, not only Troika, you know, we're delving into various different kind of games now. And how have you been adjusting to this increasing amount of work that you've been putting out? Like, because, you know, Troika started kind of small, and you started with zines, right? I remember your zines, and then I bought them, and then came Troika and just some chapbooks, and now like all these different games and you're putting together. How has this transitioned, you know, to initially doing zines and then getting bigger and bigger, and now becoming actually, you know, not just publishing your work, but becoming a publishing house for other authors?
It's a continuing learning experience, and one that we're not in any way prepared for. We're having to learn new things seemingly every month or so. Just new stuff I think would be obvious to someone who came up through doing business things. But to us, it's all new and strange. So yeah, it is odd. We don't get much time to think about or appreciate how big or small or whatever we are. We just have to just kind of plow ahead with what we're doing.
Get to it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no time to think.
And do you see yourself doing a lot more, you know, kind of this administrative work with being a publisher instead of doing more creation work? And how, because with me, I try to, you know, start a publisher, and I think that I realize that I hate that part of the work. You know, I like creating and make my book, but having to deal with, you know, distribution and printing and Kickstarters and was way too much for me. How do you deal with their parts yourself? Do you have someone that do this for you? How do you grew from being a creator and being this, you know, the CEO of a publisher or something.
it was accidental and not, I mean, even now, it's not really something I particularly want to be doing forever. I would like to get more back to the creative stuff. Cause like, I mean, like you, I mean, I much prefer that. I don't really rate the other stuff. It's just that I think, originally I did it that way just because there was no other way to do it. It's like, I mean, who else would do it? That is the problem. Yeah. That is like, I mean, we want to make physical books. We don't want to use print on demand. So it limits your choices. You'd have to. Yeah. I mean,
partner with someone. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And the kind, I think as well, like if we'd started from the beginning, just like if we took Troika somewhere and said, like, we want to publish this, I don't think people would have done, because it's not an easy thing to sell people on, to get people playing a new game that they're not familiar with, that people consider to be weird. It's not easy. And I imagine what would have happened if we went to a traditional role-play game publisher, published and then kind of probably just die on the vine and then but I mean when you have everything underneath you, everything is just kind of a perennial
thing, you have more control. Nice.
I'd love to go back to creative.
Then for whatever reason, the weirdo, the wonderful creators out there that might not know who Daniel Cell is, might be familiar with Troika or Amazonian Art Council. Would you talk a little bit about yourself, who Daniel Cell is, what is that you do? And if you can, share maybe a small detail about yourself, maybe a weird habit that you have, or the way you dress, or like the hats you like to use, and any kind of weird thing that someone said, you're weird because of this or that. Can you talk a little bit about this?
I'm Daniel Cell. I wrote Troika. I came into that through just being in the blog scene on kind of the last half of that kind of period of blogs and OSR being this kind of new cool thing. I did Troika, which is roughly based on fight and fantasy stuff. And I made a publishing house just because I needed a name to publish it under. So that's what we did. We made a publishing house, and then other people like, I got a book, you want to publish it? And then we end up with a full blown publishing house. And that's where we are now. I still write. I mean, I still have books coming out, but it's also publishing stuff. And I don't know, weird habits. I mean, I mainly just work all the time at the moment, because it's a constant state of confusion. But I guess, I mean, a weird habit with my work would be that. And I think probably one of the things that has managed to get me this far is that I'm not really, with my personal work at least, I'm not really concerned about how people receive it. Like, I don't feel like an imposter or something like that. That seems like a common thing with a lot of people, just like, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy. It's like, people are just looking at the things I did, and that's fine. And that's... that's probably weird, I think.
Yeah. Have you ever been this way? Have you ever been confident or not caring that much about what other people think about your work? Was this something you developed over time?
It might be. I mean, I wouldn't say, I'm not like, I don't know if confidence is the word. It's just, I just have a, I don't know.
If you care about it, it's enough for you, right?
If I like it, I mean, I would only be upset about how people feel about it if I knew that it wasn't good. If I just like churn something out, I guess I would feel bad. But if I like it, then I don't think my feelings can be hurt too badly about stuff I make.
Yeah, kind of my question is, have you always, you know, enjoyed your work, or something that's developed over time as you, you know, we became better, like, and then we started pursuing your work more?
I think it is that I do feel really bad when people dislike something that I know is also bad. So I guess it's not that I don't care. It's just that I don't put things out that I don't believe in, I guess, now. That's probably what it is. I mean, it's also like, it's probably because of university as well. Like I did a creative writing degree, which is it's pretty brutal with, like, you know, back and forth criticism, and people being, so you just kind of, I guess you just get used to it to a certain degree. I mean, not everyone does, but I think I was aware of it.
Yeah,
like, after being humiliated a few times, you know, in front of a bunch of people, then you just you fix it or get used to it.
Yeah, you get used to it. I remember watching a game design course with Will Wright, you know, and he talks about in developing groups how sometimes artists are really much more comfortable with criticism and, you know, corrections of their work because they went to art school and it has this practice of, you know, people criticize their work and trying to make better. And sometimes writers, that especially someone or programmers that, you know, kind of grew on themselves and don't have this, you know, tradition of criticizing each other's work, they take criticism or, you know, much more personal than someone that has this history of dealing with, you know, other artists that watching their job and trying to criticize one another to learn in a school, like you said. Mm. So maybe
I think it's also really useful as well, because most of the criticism that you see around popular culture is just variations on, like, angry video game nerd stuff. Yeah. And it's like, you can't, like, that kind of criticism, as soon as it loses its temper, it's like, you know, you just can't take anything seriously then. Like, how can you feel bad about someone being silly online? So it's very rare that you get anything.
Yeah.
Anything that's like, I mean, real criticism, I guess.
Yeah. You have to have this distance. One thing that I always keep in mind is that don't take criticism from someone you wouldn't take advice from. So
yeah, that's a good idea.
I would take advice from if you said something about my game, I would look way more into it than just random person on the internet, because I trust your work. I know what you do. And, you know, I would take advice from you. But also,
exactly.
Sometimes, even though we don't know that those person, my first reaction is to reject the criticism immediately. But sometimes what I see is that those person identify maybe a problem or an issue, and they try to give you a solution. But the solution is always wrong, you know.
Yeah.
But you have to try to look for the issue. The issue is might be there. Like, the solution is probably, they don't know what you're talking about. They know what your game, they don't know what you're trying to do. But sometimes if you know, don't take it too hard. Let it go, let it rest, and just let it think for a while. And then sometimes I can take something for it. But we have to be careful to care about this stuff.
Yeah, you just take the criticism like that as kind of a symptom rather than an actual kind of bit of information.
Exactly.
I think that's healthy.
Melsonian Art Council, the name, does Melsonian has a meaning for you? What does it mean? How did you get to that name?
It was just a nonsense name we used to use when we were in our teens. Me and a friend of mine just made it up because, I don't know, I think we were just bored one day. And it was just what do you call it, a portmanteau? I can't remember the word, where you combine a bunch of words into one. Of our names, and we just declared it a fictional country, and we just used that as the default name for anything. We needed a name, like if we're playing games or something, we'd name everything like a Melsonian thing. So we thought it'd be funny.
So you had like setting and kingdoms and places in your games that were named Melsonian? Okay.
Yeah, like if we're playing like online games together or something, we would just name everything that would just be the default. And so it just carried on. and now it's a business.
As you mentioned, Troika being, you know, a weird fantasy game, and the podcast is all about, you know, the weird. We kind of have this positive view of it, kind of weird is the new wonderful. But I'd like to ask guests here to say with their words, what is weird for you and how do you seek it, not only in your work, but also in your life, like this interesting, unique experiences. How do you see the weird for you?
I mean, weird is just, I would say, just novelty, for the most part. Usually weird things are things that are extremely personal in some way. Like I find, like with games that are made by people who have a very strong vision and a healthy amount of ignorance tend to be weird. I think... Yeah, things like I don't know. I mean, it's hard to apply
what do you
it
mean
to
by
games.
I mean, I'm just thinking. I mean, in terms of ignorance,
it's either like ignorance or resistance to kind of the zeitgeist. Something like, I mean, like in board games, it would be something like Cave Evil, which is doing its own thing very strongly, and it's weird for that reason. Like it's out there on its own, just being itself, and it's not part of the churn of new things and trends. It just, you know,
yeah.
And yeah, things like that, which are just things that you look at and you think like an alien could have made this. This is just. Unlike anything I've seen before. That's what I like. Yeah. That's weird. I guess the kind of weird people think about is just like, you know, just like random things mashed together. But like, I don't think that's anything. I think that's just what it sounds like, just random things. But yeah, weird is just novelty and some friction.
Yeah, and how do you try to insert this in your work? Like, do you always seek, you talked about being authentic and being personal, and how do you did that with Troika, for example? What personal things and authentic things from yourself would you say you inserted into Troika?
I mean, I think the first thing is trying not to think about how it will be received. In the first instance is good. I mean, that's an editing pass. You can tidy it up later if you need to, but just getting out the thing that you want to be there is the first bit. Like, I made Troika in such a way that so that I could design for it inside the in the way that I feel comfortable making things. I don't want to do long linear things. I like being able to zip around, and like when you have a new thought, you can go off and do that one straight away. So that's why Troika is kind of fragmentary like that. So I mean, that's also why there will never be a giant setting book or anything, because like I couldn't write it in it even if I wanted to. And I think it'll be, I mean, like making adventures is exactly that as well. It's just like a bunch of disconnected bits and bobs that you string together. So that's quite fun. Like, I mean, like I did, like Slate and Kelsedon is that kind of thing. It's like lots of bits that all come together. And I mean, I've got two more books coming out this year, which are going to be even more strongly bits strung together in a way. And then I don't know. I mean, I enjoy the there's fun in the contrast of elements, I guess. There's a certain, I think that's also why people think like our stuff is funny. You know, it's not got like I've said before in other places. Like, there's no jokes in it. Like, nothing's a joke. It's just that certain kinds of friction and juxtaposition are amusing. just like they are in real life. I mean, that's like, you know, that's just life. Some things are, the novelty of them makes you giggle. But that's also very realistic. Like, I mean, if you look around, like, I don't know how it is where you are, but like, if you look around at street names in London, a lot of them are ridiculous. And no one would ever use those in a fantasy game just because they're too silly, but they're real. Like, it's a very human thing just to have these kind of just strange things. And it's also, I don't know, I think I'm off track anyway, but like, I think it's also important to have that feeling, like to replicate that feeling of a history and past to something, like some dumb name you've thought up. You need to fake it. Like, that's the problem. That's why people, like, I think a lot of people don't like this kind of like random letters, fancy naming things, because it doesn't feel like it's lived in.
Well thought of, yeah.
It just feels like completely fabricated. Yeah, like if you see you know, like if you see a road called Treacle Lane, it's like, there's probably a reason why it's called Treacle Lane. It's not super important why, but it's like you have that feeling that you're walking through something that exists, which is another thing I like in these kind of books.
Yeah,
which is hard to do if you talk linearly about stuff.
Yeah. So. And in reality, it can be weird enough. Even those funny, silly names can add a little bit of weird to your, you know, fantasy games. And I see a lot about, you know, people trying to make games so serious, like fantasy games, like everything is dark and serious, and it kind of gets monotonous. And I think those, you know, silly, not necessarily made there to be funny, but it's real. It's not so, you know, not everything has to work for the plot of the game, you know. So I think that's a very, very good addition to...
I think seriousness dates you as well. Like, if you think of like what I think I was watching a thing about fashion the other day, and it's like the ideal image of a British regionary gentleman who was a very manly man, it would be laughably ridiculous right now. Just like, he's got to have like childbearing hips, a teeny tiny waist, and just a massive collar going up to your ears. It would just be funny. And so if you're trying to be like, you know, big, scary, dark, manly man kind of thing, it's just, you're going to look silly in 20 years.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed. Do you think RPGs in its essence, are they a weird thing? But before that, like you mentioned, two more books coming this year. Before we get to RPGs weird, would you like to talk a little bit about what those two books are and what's like your favorite weird things about them?
Yeah, I can do. So these are just my personal books that I've written. We have other books from other people. Like, we have Swivers coming out soon, that which people may have seen already. But yeah, we got it's two books where one of them has been written for ages and is just kind of waiting for a time to do layout and stuff. That's Get It at Sutler's, which is... I like procedural things in games. I read Traveller and just realized that you could play this without ever speaking to the GM. Just like, I'm flying here, I'm gonna buy this, I'm gonna go here, I'm gonna sell that. And I think that's just exciting. So Sutler's is that players can, the whole book is just a side activity for players who are in Troika. They can, if they find themselves low on money and they need money and they don't want to have to do like adventuring stuff for money, they can just go and work in Sutler's, which is a department store, and they work at the fishmongers there, because it's the only place that has space. And the whole thing is just, you could just go there and you just get your wages and then you carry on with your normal adventuring, or it'll be, things will likely happen to you. It's like a dungeon in reverse. You stand still and the dungeon kind of slots around you. So yeah, it's kind of huge as well. Like, it's a massive, massive book. Because I feel like if you're going to have a bunch of like random events, then you should have so many of them that they will not get repetitive. And I don't really like generic events, which is like, a customer is angry, go GM, improvise. It's like, I can improvise for free at home. I don't need that. So the book will be that. And the other one is hasn't got a name yet, but it's just I've always wanted to have a city map where all the buildings, you know what's in everything. So you can look at it and go, what's in that one? And then you can go and find out. So yeah, that's what the next one is. It's a neighborhood in Troika where every single building has what's in it, who's there, what they're doing, what's going on. And so it's another kind of tool thing for a GM, I guess, in that you can have the players in this area doing your normal thing. And if they run into a building, you know exactly what they're going to run into, which is fun.
Yeah, and what kind of neighborhood would you think doing for Troika? Because Troika, it's kind of this weird big city that anything and can go. And what can you expect? I love urban adventures and city adventures, so I'm curious about what things
there's not like a secret hidden adventure in there. I mean, there's lots of secret hidden adventures in there. Like everywhere has like people, everyone wants something and everyone's doing something, and players can definitely get involved with that kind of stuff. I mean, and there's also, it's something I've made piecemeal over quite a long time. So just like little plot lines appear and disappear throughout the whole place. Like, but the main kind of big events are that like a neighborhood has burnt down recently and people are confused about who did it. And half the neighborhood has been turned into a goblin labyrinth, which they're okay about. And yeah. There's also, what else is going on? I'm looking at the map right now. I've got this is my working map. It's covered in water stains and torn to pieces. And that's kind of what's going on. And there's a kind of a strong monarchist presence there. Like there's all these competing monarchist groups that think they've got the next king of Troika, and they don't. They're just kind of ridiculous people.
You mentioned Swivers. It's coming out soon. By Troika, is it going to Kickstarter, or are you releasing it immediately? And can you talk a little bit about it to the weirdos out there that are listening? What is Swipers?
That is a whole new roleplay game written by Luke Gearing of numerous things. He's done all these Mothership adventures, did Fever Swamp, Wolves on the Coast, all that kind of stuff. Acid Death Fantasy. And it's been drawn by David Hoskins, who is lovely. And people have already seen his art around a lot recently because I've been sharing it. But yeah, Swivers is based in The Smoke, which is a thinly veiled fictional London. And the players play as criminals in this horrible kind of Dickensian Regency, late medieval, whatever it is, city. Robin... the mansions of the rich and scampering through the sewers, escaping the crown's punishment, making deals with outer demons for petty gain, that kind of good stuff. And the players are kind of unpleasant, entirely criminal. And it's its own game. It's not a Troika thing. It's its own little city heist criminal game thing.
Nice. And where are you releasing it from? Is it going to Kickstarter?
It'll go to Kickstarter in exactly a week from recording. So the Tuesday, 6th of February?
First week of February or second week, you know, if you count one and two.
Definitely. It's coming out. It's coming to Kickstarter on Tuesday, and hopefully people like it. People have been playing it already and they seem to be liking it, so that's encouraging.
Nice. Yeah, Luke Gearing does amazing stuff, so I'm excited to see that. Yeah. Now, talking about RPGs, and do you think they are intrinsically weird the way they work? And if you do or if you do not, what is your favorite part of role-playing games?
I mean, they're weird in as much as they're not super common activities. But I mean, people do escape rooms, and that's weird. that's like the same kind of thing, and that's similar. So I don't think roleplay games are particularly weird. I mean, if anything, I think roleplay games are weirdly conservative with how they go about stuff. And and what was the last question? Like, what do I like most about games? Was it?
Yeah. What is your favorite part of, you know, the role playing game experience in general?
I enjoy it most when I'm playing or running games where you get that kind of flow moment of feeling like another kind of world's wind through your hair kind of thing. When you get that kind of moment of reality with it, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, and you feel the emotions of the character, like they are in danger, you're anxious, you're excited, and this kind of stuff, just like, right? Or no?
Just when you get any level of kind of carried away with it, I think that's when it's best.
Yeah.
I think that's when they're the strongest. I mean, whatever emotion it is, if you feel something, that's when it's good. Like, even if that emotion is just like, I mean, if you're playing like paranoia and it's just kind of giddy ludicrousness, that's fine. But you know, like the rarest one is it feeling kind of genuine, and then after that it's like being scared, and then after that it's like having a laugh. That's kind of the hierarchy of feelings.
Yeah.
Any of them are good, but it's definitely the higher you climb up that, the better.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, you're thinking role-playing games or tabletop role-playing games being weirdly conservative. And what do you mean by that? It's like the ancient structure of having one GM, four players, a dungeon map, GM screen, and dice, or it's something different? What do you mean by that?
Kind of. I don't know. I mean, it's more of a general feeling than a concrete philosophy. But like you was mentioning, like there's a lot of fiddling around with the structure of play, I think. Like there's lots of like no GMs, all GMs, is there an orc? I don't know. Is there an orc? That kind of stuff. Which is great. But I don't know if that's not the kind of innovation I'm particularly interested in.
What is the kind of innovation interesting?
I mean, I'm more interested in innovating inside that shape of GM players. That's like, I mean, I'm happy with that arrangement. That's fine. And it's just, I don't know. It's just trying to create something that you read it and go like, huh, I wouldn't have thought of that. That's kind of where the good stuff is. And I think most, and not all by any means, but like I think most,
you're more referring to games. Themes and settings, and adventures
are very are very just
repetitive, you know, in some ways.
They've all read Wheel of Time. I mean, there's of course loads and loads of stuff that's outside of that, but like the stuff that gets up there and gets seen is extremely
derivative in a way.
Yeah, just it's got a bit of a stiff back. It's you know.
Yeah. Do you have any particular creative ritual that you partake before you start writing, or you know, sit down to the layout or do your work, even if it's administrative work for the publisher? Yeah. Like, do you put your shoes? Do you put some music? Do you drink some coffee before you start? Do you have anything like this to help you get in the mood of your work?
I think when I was working more healthily than I am now, it would be that I would usually write longhand. And I usually write with nice pens just because I'm boring, so it's just nice to have. And yeah, so I lay them all out, write longhand for the first half of the day, and then write them up digitally in the last half, and then that's just kind of like the first editing pass. So in the longhand phase, you can be more just like whatever, just like go, do more, and then in the last half of the day you can just be a bit more sober and figure it out. But Yeah, no, there's no ritual because I mean the ritual is just sitting down and bloody mindedly doing it. Just like even if you just sit there and do nothing, you just sort of sit there. Like that's what's happening right now.
Do you set a time for this kind of work? Do you have a schedule that you try to follow?
I don't have I don't really have this must start at this time of day. But it's like it's just a you get up, eat something, you start work, and that's the way it goes. Like in ideal circumstances. In reality, administrative work has never meshed well with that pattern. So it's my writing, my books tend to get written in these like month long stints where I don't have an enormous amount of work to do, and then between it's just noodling around, vainly hoping.
So I remember my first books. I basically took a vacation for a day job, and during the vacation I would work on the book. So. But now it's small little bits and crannies of time that I get throughout the day, and then. Mm-hmm. But since we're talking about how you like write with with pen in the morning and then edit, I was wondering if you had I work with the pen in the morning and then in the afternoon after, and then writing in the computer. You mentioned you really like pens. Do you have any? Do you still you're still doing that because you mentioned about more healthy work that you would do that? Are you still using this the writing with pen first and then computer, or because of time and management, are you going straight to?
I mean, at the moment, I'm going straight to computer just because I'm on the tail end of both these books, so they just need to kind of just like to be brutalized a bit digitally. You just need to go through and just kind of sort them out. So that kind of nice section where you're feeling things out is past at the moment until these books come out and they're finished. Then it'll be back into that, I think.
Do you have a notebook for each project, or do you have one notebook that you're writing out these things and you organize in
some
way?
I'm not organized enough. What I do is I have several notebooks and they're scattered all over the house and I lose them fairly regularly. But then that's good because then when you find them again, you read them and go, oh, yeah, that was cool. And then you pick it up again. So it's always a surprise finding something you worked on in the past.
It is. So you kind of get inspired by your past self in a way.
Yeah, that's the best feeling when you read something. I'm like, oh, that's good. I like that. Who wrote that?
I had a good idea.
That's when you know the book's finished. It's like, oh, that's clever. I wish I wrote that. And then, I did. Brilliant.
Do you have any particular source of inspiration that you identify yourself drawing a lot from? I know, as game designer and artist, we're always looking at the world and drawing for anywhere, any place, anytime. Yeah. But for example, myself, I see myself drawing a lot from the media and stuff that I consumed as a kid. Yeah. And movies, cartoons, and comics of the late 80s and 90s. Do you have anything like this for you? Some place or some region of your imagination that you draw out from?
I cannibalize things relentlessly. There's no original ideas, or everything's original ideas. I mean, it depends which way you look at it. But in ideal circumstances, I read quite a lot. And I like to read old, slightly trashy stuff, classic, sci-fi and things like that, which is heavy on ideas and cool stuff, which is very easy to kind of get absorbed into. Same thing, films. I mean, I don't watch,
Any particular series or authors or company that used to make stuff that you like, or
with films or and stuff? Really, I just zip around with movie things. I think they have the same kind of problem that roleplay games have, is that it's hard to be too crazy because there's too much money involved. But I've been watching a lot of Italian horror lately, which is fun. It's mostly books, mostly novels and things. And then I mix that with a certain amount of mechanical tampering. I have a shelf of reference books, which I use as kind of a mixer. So like if I have like something like, I don't know, I want to take X idea or scene or creature or character from something that I vaguely remember, I will alter it in a mechanical way. Like I'll have one of my whatever books I go through, and I'll just be like, this is what I have in mind, this is what the book says I should do to it, then I find somewhere between those two things, and it creates something that I wouldn't have thought of myself, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. I have like just examples. I got like
What are those reference books you mentioned?
Yeah, like I've got like a couple of symbol dictionaries, like just stuff you can get on like that kind of stuff, just normal things. I got I've got a
like at the Saros and stuff like this.
Yeah, just like things like that. And I don't know, I got the Complete Magician's Tables. That's really good because you can
Complete Magician's Tables. Magician.
Yeah, it's like a I don't know, it's a bit hard to explain. It's like it's a mad thing that wizards use. Like it's a real wizards. Real air quotes, yeah. Whatever. But yeah, you can just like find something. I just skip through them. Oh, and there's like the books of like just pictures and things. You know, like I don't know if you know, like, oh, this is terrible. But, you know, like On Beauty, On Ugliness, those books.
Oh yeah, by yeah.
Things like that.
Umberto Eco. Umberto,
that's the one. Yeah. If the books like that, which are just like piles of things, are really useful. And you look through them until something jumps out at you as being important, or you go through them entirely randomly, and then that's
how sparks you something.
Surprise yourself. Yeah, you just you have the thing in mind. You have an alteration come from nowhere, and then you got a thing.
You mix two elements. You open two books and two different pages and see if they match together somehow.
Yeah, exactly. And then that keeps the creation interesting, because like for instance, like with this book of this Troika neighborhood, right? There's, I can't remember what it was. There's like 500 buildings here. You'll run out of ideas really quick. Like,
oh yeah.
Once you've started, you just you can't be interesting for 500 buildings. So you have. So those kind of
inspirations and reference, like a reservoir of ideas in a way, right?
Mm. Yeah, you just have this kind of multi. So then as well, you have the benefit of that the same idea can be reused over and over again.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's like,
I love this phrase that says everything that needed to be said has already been said, but since nobody was listening, it's worth saying it again. So
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's why, I mean, this is why the all that, but, you know, the internet's gone mad about plagiarism recently. So I think that's going to do a lot of harm to people. They're going to get way too scared and be like, oh, everything has to be completely original now. It's like, no. You're going to wear yourself out.
Well, I swear by a book that the title is Still Like an Artist. And for me, that book changes the way I approach, you know, creation and art. And
yeah,
it has its limits. You know, it says that, you know, plagiarism is stealing from one person and originality is stealing from like 10. So it's kind of this, like we always mix things up, you know.
Yeah. That's a really good description of it. Yeah.
And besides, you know, these places you draw ideas from, do you have any sort of, you know, role model in the way you approach your work, you do your job, or you position yourself in the community? And it can be like an artist or a writer or a game designer, or any creator that serves you as a model or you learn it from.
I mean,
from any media. Do you have anything like this?
Well, do you mean creatively or just like publishing house Lee?
You can specify, like, you know, well, because I can talk about game designer that's inspired by the mechanic, but I can talk about you know, Pete Holmes, a comedian that has this podcast that inspired this podcast. Mm. And, you know, another comedian, Bo Burnham, how they do approach their medium inspired me to approach RPG media in a different way. So it's kind of this other artist that made you think, oh, they do this in movies. Maybe I can apply the same principles and do something, you know, in my field. Do you have any?
Yeah,
you know,
I guess that you learned from. In roleplay games, it's I have a weird thing for Kevin C. Embarda. Like, I don't even know how you pronounce his last name. It probably isn't, but the Rifts guy.
Kevin C. Armada?
Palladium. Yeah, CM. Oh, CM, yeah. CM Bada. I apologize, Kevin. I don't know how to say your name. But just like, I find him inspiring because you can just be, like, you don't have to be a TikTok guy. You can be a crotchety, late middle-aged guy in a warehouse in the middle of wherever, just doing your weird thing. And that's inspiring.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he said, just, yeah, like everything about his whole, like, Palladium stuff is all very, it just, none of it works according to the current logic about how doing game books works. And I love that because it feels kind of hopeless sometimes when you see the way things are. It's all like everything has to be licensed or influenced. Yeah. And it's a bit sad. Like, it's nice to see a game designer and a game company that, for whatever problems people have with them, they do the work.
And they're doing their thing and continue doing it no matter what. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for 30 odd years? For like a ridiculously long
time.
Yeah.
And they're still in conventions. Okay. People are still playing Palladium. And it's great.
It's amazing. Like just the fortitude of it as well. Because like this is a incredibly rough business. And he's still there. And that just makes you think that maybe we can all still be there. but I mean, outside, like, I mean, like I obviously steal from Gene Wolfe all the time. I just kind of love him. I love the way he makes stories. I love the relationship he has with the reader, where it's like he tells you to your face, like, I'm going to lie to you. Like, this is all, I'm going to try and trick you, and I'm going to try to be as confusing and ridiculous as possible. And I love that. And it gives you permission to do the same thing when you see someone do it. I also like a more recent person that I absolutely love is Michael Sisko. Like, I'm unhealthily obsessed with his output. it's just something about it. Just, it's like so, I don't know. You read it and you get that feeling of just like, you have permission now. Like, see, I'm doing it. You can be like this. You can be just completely freewheeling and, bizarre, and it's fine. Just you have permission to do this as long as you do it well. And yeah, that's what I feel from that. And obviously, there's like, right, like, I love Jack Vance as well, just because when you read it, like, even when he's being clearly lazy and doesn't care about the book, he's just like effortlessly good. Like, he'll just have, he's obviously just like someone who's really, really good at it and just doesn't care. And I like that as well. So yeah, there's some people I think about.
Daniel, what would you say is like your weird mark that you leave in the stuff that you make? Can you identify like your style or your voice in your work? And if you do, what would you say it is?
I think I have a fairly clear voice in my stuff. I mean, people tell me I do, so I'm just going to go with that. I don't know what that is. But I mean, it does seem to be including monkeys somewhere. They seem to work their way, monkeys or apes, I don't discriminate, into my work. They always end up there. But yeah, I don't know. I think a strong marker is also that everyone's got their own thing going on. I think that's something that's common to all my stuff. It's like all the people you meet, they got their own shit to deal with. You may or may not get involved with that, but they don't mind.
Yeah, so it's kind of in real life too. Like, but what about the monkeys? Where did this start, and why is there any meaning behind this, or you just
no? I just think they're cool. Okay. I think it's just like, There's just, I don't know.
Have you always been into monkeys or something?
No, not really. It's just something that keeps coming back. It's like if you need a bipedal monster, just a monkey with an axe is great. Like, I mean, I think it's also because, like, I think people, if you say, like, oh, there's an orc with an axe, he's like, oh, an orc. But if you say, like, there's a chimpanzee with an axe, you're like, oh, my God, oh, I'm leaving. Like, people understand chimpanzees
more than they do
orcs.
They're really, like, strong, too. So,
yeah
with an axe, they can do a lot. Yeah.
But I think they're it's nice. I mean, and they're also, like, weirdly mundane, I think, which is nice as well. It just kind of, it flavors the soup. If you're going to be weird, you need to have something that brings you down a little bit. And I think a monkey is a good way of doing that.
Yeah.
So.
You mentioned, you know, Kevin from Paradon, you know, still being here and talked about believing we all can still be here. Do you have plans for doing games forever? What is, like, your plans with this? Because I hear some authors saying, yeah, I'm going to release this game and two more and I'm out or something like this. I can't imagine, you know, getting out, but I don't know. What is your feeling about, you know, still being here in, like, in 10 years or something?
Well, I mean, my ideal world and my ideal situation is I make books, I write the books, I design them, and they look nice. And then someone else deals with fulfillment and customers and selling them. And I get a little stipend, which is enough to pay for my bills. And then I'm just left alone quietly, just make things forever until I drop dead. That's my goal.
Yeah.
How close I get to that is yet to be seen. But, like, I mean, really, this is just what I do. I don't really want to do anything else. And at its best, this is what makes me happy, making games.
It is. Yeah, for me, it is. Like, I miss, if I stay too much without creating, I start feeling, you know, maybe creative pains or something. I don't know. It gets weird.
Yeah. It just feels lonely when you're not, when you haven't made
something's
anything
missing.
Yeah. Just, which is why I want to get rid of all the stuff that's not that. I mean, I'd quite happily make these things and just never have anyone see them. It wouldn't bother me as long as I still got my bills paid.
Oh yeah,
I would.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah.
I think that's probably why as well. I'm not too bothered about the criticism stuff because, like, I'd be happy if they didn't see them ever. Like, it's you know, you make it.
Yeah,
show it to your friends and go, look what I did.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the original Troika was. It was never really intended to be something that everyone played. It was just something. A little zine thing.
That's true, but it's still kind of nice when you see, you know, people really enjoying your game, like people from all away from other part of the world, and they're like the thing you created. And even though I always say that I make my games for myself, like I'm making this because I like dinosaurs, I make this because I want to play this, but it's still fantastic to see someone from, you know, Korea playing my game or like
All the way over there,
it's
if
great.
If you're making them for yourself as well, like, you know, every time someone really enjoys your stuff, you know you found a little friend because, like, they like the same stuff you like. So, like, you know that they're cool people, at least by your standards.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the other benefit of making something that's really, really your own.
For you.
Because then you know that if someone comes up and says, like, I love your work, it's like, then you're probably a good person then. You know? So, yeah.
What do you say, Daniel? What would you say was the weirdest game you ever played? And it could be either role-playing games or video games or any other kind of game.
You mean like system or like singular event?
It can be either system or it can be a game you played. Something that, you know, left you a mark and when you were done, you were still thinking about, that was weird, that was fun. I can, you know, explore this in some way. I don't know. Something that made an impression on you. Not necessarily a system, can be just a session.
A very, very long time ago, I played in a... this was before it was... it all went pear-shaped for him. But, like, Tecmo was a thing way back. And that was kind of magical when it was firing on all cylinders. That kind of, it was with a very, very good GM who really, really kind of understood everything. So everything felt extremely concrete. Everything was very, very heavy in there. That was nice.
And that's a hard setting to be a good GM because it's so different.
Hard. Yeah, it's like, it's very... Yeah, I mean, let's not worry about Tekkerville. But yes, there's other things. it's just that kind of, you know, it's like, it's sad, but it's dead now. there's just that kind of game. You don't really get that so much. It's it requires a certain, I don't know, something to be that crazy. I think maybe Han is like that, but I have no experience of Han. I know it's been around forever, but in other ways, games, I mean, it's a really boring thing to say, but like Dark Souls really did a number on me.
It's everybody talks about it because it did change. It started a genre of games, right, in a way. And influenced tabletop games and everything, so it's fairly
fair important. To talk another about one it. Of those things that it gave people. I mean, everything that can be said about it has been said, but like it gave you permission to create in a really I think people do appreciate it because like they talk about it all the time. You know, like that famous like, oh, it's like it is because he couldn't read English very well, so the fantasy books were just nonsense for the most part. So he created the game in the style of how he would read fantasy. And that's genius. That's like exactly how you should make things. That's super healthy for people to know about, and everyone seems to know about it. So like, I think that's great. That's really good. That's that kind of like that's what I was saying about that kind of like a healthy amount of ignorance is really good. Like if when you're too knowing, you can't enjoy it.
And if you get to trying to figure out everything, you won't make anything. You're always researching, you always find new thing and trying to,
I think that's why like a lot of like the books and media I read people think is like weird or like, you know, I don't know what you'd call it, like just too full of itself. But like, I think it's just because most people are too worried about understanding things. Like it's just, you can just read things. You don't have to be like, oh, this is what this means. You know, you just read it and go like, oh. You know, you walk around every day looking at things and going like, oh, I have no idea what that buzzing box over on the end of the street does, but it's fine. Just walk past it. Just if you read a weird That's book, true. If you're having fun, then just keep going. If you're not, stop.
Yeah. That's true. And then I'm trying to do that. I used to stop a lot on books and trying to find everything, a little detail that I don't understand. And it's probably something to do the second time I read the book, because after we read out the book, it kind of makes some sense. When you try to read it again, those parts that didn't make sense before start to make a little bit more sense, I would say.
Yeah, and that's fun in itself.
Yeah.
I think.
Daniel, do you have any other hobby besides role-playing games that you do just for yourself? I mean, you're saying like you're super busy right now, so you probably don't have much time, but like, did you have anything before this madness started?
I mean, I used to have hobbies. I read, I play board games, video games, just games, that kind of stuff. I play music extremely amateurishly for my own entertainment. Nothing particularly interesting. It's just, it's just one of those, they're the things that I do for myself. I don't have any desire to monetize in any way.
That's great. And important. has any of those things that you do just for yourself helped you getting in a new place with your work? Have you learned anything, you know, by playing music or, you know, read? Reading, like we talked about this, but how it influenced your creations. But do the hobbies actually help you through your work, or do you think they take time away from it?
No, sometimes you'll have a little breakthrough while doing some stuff, like reading something or watching a film. I think like I had that with I read Viraconium between the two first printings of Troika, and Viraconium just kind of solved a few problems I had like logically about how Troika is in my head, and that was important, and that was just bumping into something. I wasn't aware of Viriconian before then, and it was M. John Harrison, I think. Terrible with remembering names. I like playing music badly because it's absolutely impossible for that to be useful to work in any way. So that's why I like that, because otherwise everything just kind of gets looped back in and it's a bit exhausting sometimes.
Yeah. And what do you play? Do you play guitar? Or what is?
Oh, I just picked up the recorder a few years ago. Just because it's very manageable. I got that. Yeah. We have a few other instruments. We just kind of mess around with them, just as like in a bit like the reading. If you stop worrying about being good, you can just enjoy yourself a little bit. So the recorder. I have an Erhu as well, which is kind of fun. They're just toys, really. I'm not very good at anything with those.
Yeah,
I wanted to stay bad. Sorry, go on.
I recently got a ukulele just to have something to play too and practice something. That's just for myself.
And, just nice. It's just nice having a thing that makes noise. It's therapeutic.
Now we're getting, in more the personal part of the interview. I'm going to ask you some question about your experiences, your life, and things like this. And I want to start about, weird experiences you might have had, if you're comfortable talking about, maybe if you had any kind of out-of-body experience or near-death experience, and if that changed you in some way. Have you ever had any experience like this?
Maybe once, but like I wish I had more and proper, because like I've always said I would really love to join a cult. Like if someone could convince me, I would be all over it, but I feel like I've been brain damaged. Like I don't think I can find religion anymore. I really, really want to. Like it'd be fantastic to have that, but I don't think I can. But I mean, I had one out of body experience where I was just really miserable. Cause like when I get really miserable, I get kind of like gummed up and I can't think. So, I think I must've been like half asleep, but, I had an extra version of myself telling me very boring things, like how to get through the next week. It's like, you have to do this, you have to do that, go do this. Just do that. Stop thinking. Go do that. Hmm. Not in such a nice way. It was vaguely sinister, but it was quite boring. And as out of body experience, very dull. It was very practical advice. It's like it's what I would have done if I wasn't just miserable. Otherwise, no. I would love to.
You talked about religion and you can't find it. Are you atheist or do you believe in God? You just can't find a religion.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what I am. Like I read a lot of occult and theology stuff just because I would really like to. There's a lot of it in my Troika work. If people haven't noticed, like everyone's named after a saint. I don't know. It's, I think
you think it's something missing?
Maybe. It could be that. It could just be. I think like in the last maybe decade, I've been really sick of the cynicism of everything, and just having that kind of having a sincere belief in anything would be really nice. And I would very much like that, but I don't know how. When I was young, I was raised in like Church of England. Like, I don't know if you know anything about the Church of England, but it's like, it's not a very religious place. It's just old ladies making cakes and being catty to each other, arguing over who gets the seat near the front of the church. But I never felt like there was any real religion involved in any of that.
Have you tried, going to other temples or studying anything if you're interested in this? Or
I'm too nervous. There's a platonic group quite a famous one. They're like a registered charity in the UK. And like I've had their books for ages, and I just realized the address on the inside of the book is just a bus ride away from me. I could go there, just become a Platonist and just, you know. But I don't know. It's it is a mix of I'm trying to get over my cynicism, and also just I'm a little bit nervous. Just in general, like I'm a little bit nervous. Like it's because to even start on the road to a sincere anything, you have to get past that kind of that barrier of being kind of a little bit intimidated and scared of things. And that's it's just a lot of work. It's a lot of work and time. And
it is.
I don't know. Do you?
Well, I was raised Catholic, and I, you know, went through a phase with this kind of Japanese religion in Brazil called the Messianic, the one with the Jorei. I don't know if it has that in England. But then when I got into the youth group and started, you know, checking the church for what it was doing, and I started questioning about the money, like the donation of the money, what are we doing? People were questioning, and nobody wanted to answer me. And then I think I got into comedy or anything, and it was very atheistic. And, you know, George Carlin, I think, was the one that made me atheist, in a way.
But I do have,
I studied philosophy, at least Stoicism for my anxiety. And it does help me a lot, you know. It has a lot of similarities with, you know, the morals and the teachings of many religions, including Buddhism, some stuff from Catholicism, that draws a lot from it, because it grew while Stoicism was really popular in Rome. So that's something that really helped me, like those phrases. And sometimes when I'm very anxious and then I started, you know, repeating those teachings about, if I can't do anything about it, it doesn't do any good for me to think about it and obsess about it. And, you know, this too shall pass. It's something that I really take to heart. And
Stoicism is a weird.
Do you have anything like?
I mean,
do you have anything that helps you deal with these difficult times? You talked about, you know, feeling miserable sometimes. Do you have anything that helps you deal with those difficult times? I, for once, when I had a panic attack in 2021, I attacked my anxiety all the ways I could. I started doing more exercise because I wasn't doing anything like meditation. I did some therapy. I took some mushrooms. I did microdosing, and now I'm on CBD. But you know, do you have anything that helps you deal with those difficult moments? And Stoicism, of course. I start reading a lot, and every day I wake up, I read a page from one page from two books about the Stoicism. One about yourself, and one about being, you know, a better parent.
Yeah, I mean. No, like I'm not. I don't have very healthy habits. That's the problem, and that's another reason why it's kind of something to look for. Like I spent a lot of time. I was trying with Spinoza quite hard. Spinoza has become weirdly popular. It's like a philosophy thing.
Yeah, I saw some videos about it.
Yeah. And he's either like the arch atheist or completely in love with God. No one can decide. He's one of those. And I don't know. It's like it was very appealing, but it's I find the problem is that when you get past the surface of any of these things, you just want to question people. It's like do you really like when you talk to like, I see a lot of interviews with like Catholic priests, and like, do you believe in God in heaven? It's like, oh well, it's a complicated like metaphors, and like, but what is the thing? What is the thing you believe? What is the fact of like the whole? I mean, you're a Catholic, you know what's the thing? The leftover wine and bread goes in the special box, and the special box is the body of Christ, and like, it's like, how literal is that? Because if that's not literal, that's not very fun anymore. Like, is it the body of Christ, or is it to be treated as the body of Christ? It's like, it's important how you answer that question. And it's just, I don't know, like, I don't know what it is. That's part of why I'm just kind of like,
Yeah.
Undecided.
Yeah, I think in those matters of spirituality and religion, we can't be literal. This is just stories to try to teach you a lesson about living a good life, I would say. And
that's not fun, though, is it?
That's
why I like Spinoza's popular. Because Spinoza's a what do you call it? I can't remember the word for it. It's the thing where everything is God. There's literally nothing outside of God. Like you're God, cup's God, everything's God. Which is why he's either most Godly or the least Godly.
I like that. It has a lot of similarities with the stuff that I hear from, you know, Pete Holmes, the comedian, who is very spiritual, and he talks about that all the time. Like, we are all a manifestation of the universe. We're all consciousness, and then we all use these bit bags in different ways. But if we take all that, like, because it all sequences. Now, I am Diogo, but I was born in Rio. I had these parents. I was raised like this. But if you take all those circumstances, what is left is you. And what is left? Yeah. Just, you know, consciousness that is pretty much everybody else. There was, you know, one of the interviews I talked about, maybe we are all the same thing. Like, we are all different versions of the same thing. Like, a multiverse of yourselves. And that every person is yourself in a way, just born in different circumstances.
I don't know, you're going down to the very fact that we are all just the same cell
composition
that we produced for the first time. We're all the same kind of like extension of an organism. Just like one big giant fungal mycelium in a way.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I would love it. So if there's any cults out there that think they can get me, I would be way into it. Way into it.
Besides religion and spirituality, I talked about, you know, out-of-body experiences. Have you ever had any experience with altered states of awareness, whether through meditation, hypnosis, or psychedelics? And if you did, could you talk about experience with that?
I mean, I think I do meditation regularly, and I don't know if what I do is weird or not, but it's like I've never had problems sleeping because I can just like a problem I had with meditation is I'd always fall asleep. So if I want to go to sleep, I can just meditate. So like it's, so I can always fall asleep, no problem. I get a lot of luck with playing with being half asleep as well, because getting to the point where I'm almost asleep is very easy. So like you can get your brain working pretty easily when you're in that state. And like I keep a journal next to my bed because I often have just very well constructed dreams. So sometimes you can use those in the morning. Or just when you're falling asleep, you just get stuff. And you can, I mean, I can do it. I don't know. Again, I have no idea if this is common to everyone, but like I have a lot of luck with just being half asleep and just kind of promoting that kind of dreaminess.
That's a state that a lot of artists seek, and it's hard to get. I remember reading about, you know, Salvador Dali, who would sleep with, you know, a spoon on his mouth.
So when
he would fall asleep, he would wake up and stay in that state of half asleep. So that's great if you have the practice and you have the technique to get there. I imagine that's very healthy for creativity, like, right?
Like Jim Woodring has something like that. I don't know if you know Jim Woodring. He does the Frank comics. He's a comic artist. He's super good. I'm a big fan. But he calls it his sticky state. Which is, I think a good way of describing it.
Technique to get there? Like, do you do this meditation to go to sleep and you don't go? Yeah. You just stay in that sleep state?
I mean, if I get a good idea, I'll wake up and then write it down because it'll disappear. As soon as you fall asleep, it's gone.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to keep it. It's not often that you get to keep the dreams when you wake up. So it'll usually be I have to write them down. That's why it's next to the bed, because you have to do it in the middle of the night usually. I mean, most of the time it's complete nonsense, but like it's sometimes you get some good stuff. And often you'll resolve problems just because it's you get that state where I don't know, like it's like you put your brain into those candy floss machines. It just kind of spins out and then just shapes will happen. And then sometimes something will solve itself. But I mean, it's not a central part of how I do things. It's just sometimes.
It's just another tool in your arsenal, I would say. If you're able to do that, that's something good to use sometimes.
I tried mushrooms in the past and that was fine. I'd like to try it again. Now I'm older, but
I've just tried older. As a kid, as a teenager, I was super afraid of everything. So yeah, I tried older.
that'd be worth trying maybe. But I also like, cause I've done all the spiritualism reading stuff, like all the wizard books and religious stuff. It seems they all kind of agree that drugs are cheating. so there is that. I don't know.
There is the theory that we kind of evolved because of, you know, psychedelics and mushrooms.
But there's also the other problem is that Hollywood podcasters have made hallucinogenics extremely uncool. it's always what's that meaty bald one that everyone watches? The comedian
Joe there. Rogan?
Joe Rogan, that guy. It's like he's always it's DMT, man, DMT. Like, oh Jesus, like good way to make DMT the most uncool drug in the world.
I haven't tried that one.
It looks, it's a bit scary. Watching people just switch off. It's like, I'm all right.
Oh yeah, I haven't watched anyone using this, but talk about maybe other reader experiences. Maybe talk about your beliefs in the supernatural or anything. Do you believe in ghosts or aliens or, you know, any kind of weird thing out there? And have you ever had any experience with that?
No, I mean, I once saw something when I was very young in a caravan park that I thought would be a UFO, but never really figured out what it was, but it probably was some kind of weird kite. But that wasn't like formative or anything. You see things all the time, like late at night, where it's like, I have no idea what that is. Then you get closer and it's just a bloody cat with its back to you or something. Nothing scarier than a backwards cat at night. But no, again, it's another thing. Like I would love to be abducted. I'd love to have a ghost come and mess with me. Any of these things I would really, really like. I'm not cynical. Silence phone. It's not that I'm cynical as such, it's just I feel like I've been
You haven't had the chance yet to experience anything,
All for it. Very, very open. I'm scared of going into abandoned hospitals at night, but I don't know if that's ghosts or cowardice.
If you want to go the experience, you have to go to their place. You know, the ghosts are very, you know, that's territorial. So yeah,
that is it. I don't know.
Daniel, now getting into more the whimsical and you know, kind of fun questions that are more about your personality and things that you like. Mm-hmm. If you could have any superpower, what superpower would you choose to have, and what would be the first thing you would do with it?
Superpower. I mean, I don't know. Flying would be nice. Yeah, that'd be nice. I'd enjoy that. It's like one of the meditation techniques, going back to the other thing that I use is something like that. And it's just like, I think it'd be nice to know what it really feels like to fly.
Where would it be the first place you would fly to if you could fly?
Just hang around in some clouds. That'd be good. and just come back. Just up and down, really. I wouldn't go sideways very much. probably it. Yeah. And then you can just go check out the ocean a bit, stuff like that. Just noodle about.
Just enjoying the winds on your arms.
Just floating about.
And if you could choose any weird and fantastic or, you know, supernatural thing from fiction, whether it's from comics, books, movies, or even games, and make it real in our world, what would you choose to make real and why?
Oh, I'd like some kind of galactic empire. That'd be fun. Just to turn up one day and just be like, "Yep, you're in a nature reserve. It was a joke all along. This space you've been looking at, it's a curtain, and there's just loads of stuff out there, and it's just this big wide universe of fun new things. any of them, any Galactic Empire, good, bad, whatever, I'll take it. Good is preferable.
You just want to shake things up, right? You want to be
You want things to be broader.
You want a giant cut. You want to be abducted. You want a Galactic Empire. Just want to
just expand.
See something happen, right?
Yeah, it's anything.
It's too boring, like here. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the gist of it. Yeah.
And finally, Daniel, do you remember the last time you felt, you know, really happy and grateful for being here and being alive? And if you do, can you share with us when was that and how did you feel?
I try to practice gratitude generally.
Do you?
I try to.
Do you have a practice for it? Do you have a practice that you do regularly?
It's something I picked up when I was young, like to deal with like anxiety. It's just this to take. It's just a grounding exercise, I guess, is what you describe as, like a CBT grounding exercise, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Just like acknowledging the realness and the kind of the presence and the future, and how everything must change, and that's good. But generally, I also have a problem with gratitude. I think like I don't often feel kind of bathed in love. I mean, not like you don't get it from people. Like it's just that kind of beaming kind of that thing you see when people look at their babies or something, where it's just like just insufferable amounts of joy and love.
That doesn't happen all the time.
That's
too.
The cult's job. So I need to join a cult. They need to give me that. I need to whatever they can. I was happy the other day when someone I'm working with just David Hoskins did some arranged some administrative things that I didn't have to do. That was like great. I was almost a little choked up. Like I didn't like it's just like I don't have to do something. It's like I can not do that.
That's great. Yeah.
Not even joking. Just like it's the best gift.
It is. Like because sometimes we have so much stuff in our head and I still have to do this and someone that goes there and does it for us. It's great. We feel relieved in a way and grateful. So yeah, I understand it. Daniel, thank you so much for coming here. Those were the questions I prepared for you. And do you have any last message to give the wonderful weirdos out there that are listening to us?
I don't know. Just steal things. Ignore the internet. Just steal stuff. And also go and buy Swivers next week, please. That would be really helpful.
Oh, yeah. Go buy Swivers. We're putting links on the show notes, so check it out. And Daniel, can you take us out saying the catchphrase of the show? Keep it weird, everybody.
Keep it weird, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Weird Games and Weirder People. If you'd like to keep up with the show, please subscribe to be notified when we release new episodes. If you'd like to support us, please leave a review or head on to ko-fi.com/WGNWP. See you next time, and remember, weird is the new wonderful.